Since 2019, my life has been connected to Mauritania. First, I was in the country for 3 months because of a language course. Years later, I returned and built up a tourism company with local partners. You could say I have a soft spot for the state of 4 million inhabitants between Morocco and Senegal. Well, maybe that's true. Maybe it's also because of the opportunities the country offers me. The emphasis here is on me as a white European or German. Germany invests a lot of money in Mauritania and has no colonial past there, unlike France. I'm very aware that just because of my background, I have advantages that many Mauritanians do not have, even in their own society. In addition to the language course, I was able to act in a relatively unfunny Mauritanian sitcom in 2019, but I also made my first contacts in the hip-hop scene and even recorded a song with a local artist. In many conversations with locals back then, I learned that hip-hop creates a free space of expression in a country that is otherwise not so free. I experienced that myself. While on the ground in 2019, I heard police officers shooting rubber bullets at protesters as part of the presidential election. The outcome of the election surprised no one. The friend of former President Abdelaziz, Mohamed Razwani, took power and has been president ever since. Both of them are in the long tradition of presidents from the ranks of the military. But in 2019, I also heard this song. The song was made by the rap band Oulet Le Bled, Sons of the Country. In it, they settled accounts with the then president Abdelaziz. When this song was played in the background at our breakfast, I was told that I should not play the song in public, otherwise I would get in trouble. I had some questions about it, and I was told that Oulet Le Bled had to leave Mauritania, emigrated to Senegal years ago. But even there, they were not safe, I was told. There was an assassination attempt on them, so they went to Canada. They still live in Canada today. And this song was my first contact with political Mauritanian hip-hop. It shouldn't be my last one. Therefore, it shouldn't come as a surprise that I'm doing my master's thesis on hip-hop in Mauritania. More specifically, the function of hip-hop in breaking political taboos. I'm making a documentary about it. And that's why I went back to Mauritania 4 years after my first trip and spent 2.5 months there researching, interviewing and collecting material. Before this last trip, I did an interview with the artist Yero Genako, a Mauritanian rapper living in exile in the Netherlands. From him, I learned about the events of 1989, when 28 soldiers, all of them Fulani, had been murdered on November 28th, and about the deportations as part of Mauritania's war against Senegal. Yero refers to these deportations as genocide. I knew before that Mauritania was a multi-ethnic country, divided into the Arab Berberi then, the whites, their former slaves, the Black Haratain, who speak Hassaniya in common with the Bidhan, and the other groups, the Black Wall of Pula and Soninke. Through Yero, I learned about the conflict between Fulani and Bidhan. Because, and Yero is not the only one to say this, it is the Bidhan who rule Mauritania, even though they only make 20 to 25% of the population now. Apart from the event of 1989, I considered, based on the very sparse academic literature and journalistic articles, which topics might be taboo in Mauritania. In the end, I entered the country with having a rough idea of possible topics, kind of a checklist. Slavery, racism, corruption, caste system. It was clear to me before my trip that I would mainly do qualitative research, and the interviews and the focus group would be my main source, as well as the lyrics of certain songs. Also, social media analysis would be a part. I abandoned the idea of quantitative surveys in Mauritania, which, in retrospect, was the correct decision. With my knowledge of today, I'm lacking the fantasy of how surveys would have worked out in Mauritania. I conducted 18 interviews during my time there, mostly with hip-hop artists. But it was important to me to have a diverse group, men, women, artists, organizers, activists, journalists, successful and unsuccessful people, ethnically diverse, and different ages. I also wanted to include the experience of those living abroad, such as the Fulani rap group Diamintekki, who, according to their own accounts, had to leave the country due to state persecution. Similar to the Hassaniya rapping Aulet Lebled, it was mainly Aziz, the former president, who was an enemy to Diamintekki. I'm used to working with texts and data. Never before I have used interviews in the context of research. What I realized in the process? I do not exist out of context. I am a white person, a non-Mauritanian, a German, a man, a person of 29, a rap artist, a tourism entrepreneur, an intern, a tenant, and a friend. So, I am part of my research. Bolton writes in his text that objectivity in research is impossible. And perhaps my research comes closest to what Ellingson refers to as interpretive research story, which is about a world that is constructed through language and interaction. And the researcher is a character in his own story. Yeah, I do think that this is a proper description of what I have done in Mauritania. And that alone is just my role. What about the roles of my 20 interview partners? When I spoke to the rap duo Diamintekki, they told me that they were politically persecuted and had to leave Mauritania. But when I spoke to others about Diamintekki, some of the other artists referred to them as Fulani racists and said their flight was never necessary. I learned in the interviews that Mauritanian rap has also a personal level. How can I figure out which artist is in what relationship with whom? And does that influence what they say? How can I know if Diamintekki or Yero or Aulet Lebled really had to flee? And what does that tell me about repression in Mauritania? One artist told me off camera that it was easy for black artists in Mauritania to play the race card to get asylum in Europe or the West. Beyond personal circumstances, the question of ethnicity is also crucial to the answers. I learned that for some Haratain, the issue of slavery was the most important, but for some Fulani, the issue of November 28 and the deportations were even more. I decided to make that very thing the basis of my research, to compare answers, to question perspectives. The following are answers from three interviews on the subject of state repression. The first one is Adnan Abdu, a Mauritanian who lives in the US now. He is not a rapper. He has nothing to do with hip-hop. So my question was,
do you think that there are, besides religion, that there are topics that you cannot publicly address?
I think no. I think freedom of religion, freedom of speech in Mauritania is completely given because it's not effective. It's nothing threatening. For example, if you speak about something and you are influential, yes, maybe. But there are very few influential people in Mauritania, and these are the religious scholars. And these people are, you know, country knows that the government knows how to play, you know, how to dance the dance with these people. So they have no problem with giving you all the right you want to talk about anything you want, because, you know, for example, I just think that there are millions of problems, like endless problems, and, you know, speaking about one problem, people are used actually to problems. They don't care. Like, if you talk to them about, okay, there is this problem, the government is not doing, they're just like, okay, yeah, you know, who cares? Actually, a lot of people, as I addressed in the other conversation, a lot of people, they are not used to the fact that the government is there to do a job for them. They're used to the idea, or they're wired to think that government owns, they own the resources, and yeah.
The second one was the rapper Imperial, who is still living in Mauritania, in Nouakchott.
Il y a des problèmes de la liberté d'expression.
Yes, there are problems with freedom of expression. But people have to understand that freedom of expression is not total freedom, because there are certain expressions that are a violation of freedom. I, for example, as a rapper, when I want to address the state about a program that has not been respected, I try to be armed with knowledge first, to have reliable sources, and to have what to defend myself verbally according to certain skills that I've required, so that I do not sink into something that I cannot help. Because there are many people who think of that as a violation of freedom, violation of the state, violation of state institutions, violation of popular freedom. And they call that freedom of speech, maybe. And then the third interviewee, Diamanteki. I asked them if there was a difference in freedom of speech under Aziz and under Razwani. It's the same. They were influencers who were arrested at the time of Aziz, and we see influencers who are arrested at the time now. Like who? Like many. There are many influencers. Ismail Awan was arrested. He just did comedy on the speech of Razwani. These three interviews show how different the answers are, but we also see how differently people interpret the question. You can compare the answers, but still an interview is not a survey. I can't just make a checklist of the answers like I originally planned. And that's the data I'm working with. There were four events during my time in the field that brought the importance of my topic to my mind. First, the killing of human rights activist Sufi Ulchain by police officers at a police station in Nouakchott. Such a killing happens only every few years. It resulted in massive demonstrations and some people were fired. But who gave the order to kill Sufi? This killing showed me that taboos are not an issue of the past, but that repression is, if not a commonplace, always a part of life. Second, at the Women's Independence Festival, I experienced massive police violence. Police officers beat concert goers with batons to control the situation. Later, I talked to others about it. No one was shocked, and some even defended the police officers' actions. Third, a policeman stopped my car on the way home and asked for tea or coffee, meaning money. My first personal experience of corruption in Mauritania. Fourth, after four Salafis broke out of prison in Nouakchott, the government imposed an internet blackout for about 10 days. The whole country stood still. Many complained, but the power of state to take such drastic measures became very clear. When I tell my story, I also want to talk about the challenges of my research. One big challenge was making contact with interview partners. It was not always difficult to get a person's number, but often they didn't answer on WhatsApp. Therefore, I needed door openers. I had them, which was nice, but one of my door openers left Mauritania overnight and now lives in the US. Another problem was the unreliability of some people. Often the interview partners were late, but unfortunately often my own team was too. It happened that interview partners almost cancelled, or we had to postpone interviews because I was hours late due to my partners. Contrary to what was discussed in the internship plan, I was also not introduced to artists and important people by my internship organizer. Not a single one, to be exact. In that respect, the situation on site was completely different than initially planned. In addition to these very practical problems, there were general issues that I faced as a researcher. Which source is to be trusted? Mauritania is completely under-researched scientifically. And hip-hop especially. Usually I used media reports, but that was also difficult. For example, I read an online article about Hamza Brahim got arrested in 2013. But personally, he told me that this was simply not true. He was never arrested. Some interview statements were also problematic, because some rappers often have problems with each other, and also occasionally have a tendency for self-promotion. Since I was dealing with video interviews, some were also particularly careful in their statements. It was very important here to talk with my interviewees off camera and to other people as well. Quite often, this resulted in answers who were as different as night and day. These problems also made me understand my own task in this research. It was to compare interviews, to match data material with more widely available material, like online reports, background research and individuals, social media analysis and text analysis. And I also had to become clear about my own position. Perhaps this realization is the most important one. I do not exist without context, and this context has an influence on the interviews. I'm not done with my research yet. There are still two interviews I want to do in Europe with Mauritanian artists in exile. The next weeks, I will systematically compare the interviews I have done and focus on text and social media analysis. So, there's still work to do. Let's get started.